Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery on Round Rock, where we talk about games, comics, and other stuff on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And let's go to the show for this week. It's the Roguecast for Wednesday, September 16th. And gentlemen, much news to discuss about the store, so I'm going to run it all down.
Okay. I don't think you got the stones.
All right. I do.
Prove it.
All right. So Gaming with Rogues is Monday, September 21st, and they're going to be doing Dixit, and that will be over at Kirby Lane. And then coming up on Saturday, we have Batman Day,
right?
September 26th. This is a yearly thing DC is doing now to promote a small underground character of theirs.
Maybe it'll take off.
Yeah, dresses like a bat, parents dead.
It sounds too weird, though. It's too indie.
It's a little odd.
Anyway, maybe if they do it each year, it'll eventually
change. Yeah, it might catch up. So we'll have a bunch of things. We'll have free Batman comics for those who, you know, while supplies last, for while you, if you buy anything. We'll have some Batman paper masks. We've got a discount on all the Batman stuff. Possibly Batman might show. You never know.
Yep. We gotta front load our
Spotify?
Spotify with Danny Elfman's Batman theme.
We will play only the Danny Elfman theme over and over and over again all day.
Well, I don't know about you guys. I'm throwing in some prints. I just need some variations.
Yes, Batman's.
Then on that Sunday, September 27th, we'll have our Magic the Gathering Battle for Zendikar pre-release, which there's still spots for if you'd like to sign up for that. Then coming up in October, Revival is our book that we're doing for Reading with Rogues. That is October 13th, the second Tuesday. We're doing that at Mambo House Cuban again.
And I believe we're doing the first two, or if someone should choose, the big graphic novel collection.
Right. The preferred choice for everyone would be the Revival Volume 1 hardcover, because it's awesome. Yeah. And has both trades in it as well as some extras. However, if you'd like to, you can also pick up just Volume 1 or Volume 1 and 2. Those will all be covered under the standard Reading with Rogues discount of 15%, or get a Rogue card, you get 25% off.
Yeah, a number of our regular Reading with Rogues people have Rogue cards.
Yep.
And they're just reaping it. That's right. The benefits.
And if you have that, you get a 10% off on the Gaming with Rogues, which means that up until next Monday, if you want Dixit, 10% off, you got a Rogue card.
Nice.
Then Ladies' Night will be on October 14th. That's at Palermo Pasta House. Then Gaming with Rogues, October 19th. Will be Forbidden Island, the cooperative game of escaping a sinking island.
Right. We determined that they had done Forbidden Desert before, yep. And this is sort of Forbidden Island, which shares some themes and gameplay style.
And they have not decided place on that one yet. We'll know when we get closer to October. But what it means is that starting September 22nd, you can get 10% off on Forbidden Island with your Rogue card.
Righto.
Then, first time for us this year, October 30th and 31st, we're going to be doing Wizard World.
Yes. We'll
have a table. Dave and I will be down there. We'll be selling stuff. We'll be harassing.
It's Halloween time, too, so I know. You have to come down.
Yep. We'll be harassing whatever celebrities walk by the booth to try and get selfies with them.
Dave and Randy will be wearing costumes.
We might be wearing capes. costumes have not been discussed yet.
Wait, what now?
But if you're not down at Wizard World, or even if you are and you want to come back up to the store, Nick will be here running our Halloween Comic Fest.
That's very true.
Which is Diamond's sort of secondary free comic book day. There's a bunch of cool, I think, isn't Sabrina one of the ones this year?
Yeah, Sabrina is, I think, Gyo?
Gyo, yeah, the guy from the horror manga that we all love.
Probably one of the creepiest horror mangas you will ever run across.
So there are some things for kids, but there's also great stuff for grown-ups.
I remember seeing, for instance, there's a reprint of one of the really great Batman Adventures comics from the 90s.
Yeah.
It has like some kind of, you know, it's like Man-Bat or something kind of creepy in it.
Right.
I'm sure there's a Simpsons Treehouse of Horror.
Yep, I'm sure that's in there too. It's a good selection of stuff. We won't have the big selection we do for Free Comic Book Day, so come out early if you want to guarantee yourself a comic.
And more than likely we'll have candy.
We might have candy. That's possible.
That's Halloween.
And Nick's going to be in a costume.
Sure. I mean, you never know.
Well, I can promise you this. Amanda will be in a costume.
Amanda will be in a costume.
So if you're doing stuff for Halloween, if you're going to be out and about downtown, come to Wizard World and see us. If you're going to be out and about in Round Rock, come to the store and see us. Or drive all over Austin and see us in all places.
You can stalk us at our homes.
Yeah. I'll give you Dave's address. All right. So moving on from store news to regular news. There's a few this week. A lot of sort of TV news has been developing. We are closing in on the TV season. But first of all,
tonight, actually.
Technically, yes.
Technically, we have.
But really, it's not until September 21st that all the stuff starts. Right. Minority Report and
all the
that
good
kind
stuff.
Of stuff.
I mean, tonight is Neil Patrick Harris, and who knows what that's going to look like.
Yeah, Neil Patrick Harris is doing a variety show, so there you go. all right, so Seth Rogen has been more or less confirmed that Preacher is going to series at AMC.
Right. I saw, was that an actual poster for it I saw?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kind of cool.
I'm still curious. I'm still skeptical, but...
I think in the spectrum, I might be the most skeptical here.
I'd like it to be good.
I'm not skeptical or not skeptical. I'm actually kind of disinterested in it. I was never a huge Preacher fan. Whether it succeeds or fails is irrelevant to me. I'd like for it to succeed for the fans. But here's what I'm guessing.
Yep.
It'll succeed somewhat. It's going to be a somewhat different beast than the comic.
Yeah.
It'll share a lot with it, but I think it'll kind of stand on its own.
It will probably be less profane.
Or fail on
If you're Seth Rogen and I don't know who all the other writers are.
Yeah.
But do you go to Garth Ennis?
I would. Of course you would.
I mean, I would too. Yeah. I mean, I think it would be obvious.
I think
I don't know, because like they're going to be having to tell him things like, we can't use swears all the time.
Yeah.
And why would you bother to have that grief?
I guess that's true. I don't know. You know, the Game of Thrones guys went to George R. R. Martin, and that worked out well for everybody. He wrote some of the stronger episodes.
But he didn't have to change what he was.
Well, AMC also went to Robert Kirkman. Robert Kirkman's written episodes for Walking Dead.
That's true. I don't know. Somehow, Garth Ennis feels like a guy who would say, F off, if you told him that you can't drop the F-bomb.
Yeah.
Whereas Kirkman would say, all right, we can work with that.
Yeah.
He's a little bit less... rebellious.
I don't know. Ennis has been in this for a long time. He's got to be getting to the point where he's just like, you know, it is what it is.
Nope. He just did The Boys a few years ago, and that was his...
The Boys is like 10 years ago.
Okay. But every single thing he does is some version of that.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if they've reached out to him or not. I'm curious.
I think it'd be interesting to know that.
I think they would have actually been talking about it more if they had.
Yeah.
Because that would be...
But it just went to series.
That's true.
I don't know. We'll keep an eye out. More exciting news for all of us is that Netflix is doing new Black Mirror.
Right. Yes.
This has not been 100% confirmed, but it's been all but confirmed. And they've got the guy from Black Mirror on it.
Before we get new ones, though, can they put the Christmas special on there?
They should do that, because I watched that and it's really good.
I mean,
and just a quick recap for people who don't know what Black Mirror is, because it's not a super well-known property.
No.
It was 2 3-episode seasons of a UK show.
Yep.
Each episode was a standalone, almost like a little mini movie that presented some almost always dark vision of the future, and by no means like what you think of as cliched visions of the future.
No,
like
no.
Blade Runner or
not post-apocalyptic.
These were like sometimes just like 5-10 years in the future. And they focused on the way technology will change us.
Social media was a big part of a lot of it.
Mm-hmm. And how it'll become more invasive in our lives.
Yep.
They're extremely thought-provoking.
They're amazingly well-acted, amazingly well-written.
Peggy Carter's in one of them. And the guy from Ex Machina.
Yeah, Dumbhulk
is in one about robots.
Yep.
Yeah. I think we probably can't recommend the series more highly.
No, it's on Netflix. The only thing that's not is the Christmas episode.
Honestly, watch the first episode. If you like the first episode, you're pretty much guaranteed to like...
And if you don't like the first episode, watch the second episode, because the first episode is weird.
It has something that may put some people off, and the second one, it is easily, in its way, the most extreme.
Yeah, it is. It is. They start off in sort of a weird place.
Now, I thought it was amazing.
Yeah, me too.
But I do know some people who liked it, one of our customers, thought it was really well done, and was like, I cannot watch any more after this.
Yeah, so also, go in knowing as little as possible.
Yep.
Yeah.
Charlie Brooker is the guy who's behind it. He does some sort of a screen wipe and stuff like that in UK that is sort of a critique
on the news.
Yeah. But he also did The Dead Set.
Right. A not super well known, though it should be.
Yeah.
I can't believe it's not been imported more.
It's not on Netflix either.
It's a, 3 or 4-episode UK series about zombies. That is set in the world of, on the set of Big Brother.
The Big Brother house, yeah.
Which I guess was a bigger thing in the UK, but you don't need to know really anything about it other than it's a bunch of kind of self-involved weirdos who in the media spotlight. A zombie plague tears through the UK, and they are somehow the last people left alive in their little biodome thing.
Yep.
Sleeps, and their skeevy producer
For me, who is not a big zombie fan, actually was really, really interested and got really involved in that one, too.
Yeah.
Well, just really well done all around.
Brooker, even though he does satire, I've never not felt involved with his characters.
Yeah.
You know, there were even characters in there that were among the skeevy cast and stuff like that, who end up kind of, they are treated sort of ultimately as human beings.
Never felt like any of the characters were very cliched or...
Maybe the producer. It was such a good time watching him be an a-hole.
But yeah, so Netflix says, because of how well it's done for their Netflix, they're going to do more Black Mirror, new original episodes.
And that's pretty amazing.
That's great. So I'm very excited about this. We've seen this sort of the British shows being co-produced with like Amazon, with The Catastrophe, and with Hulu. So it's nice to see Netflix kind of getting in this game as well. Mm-hmm. So, all right. Other TV news related to The Flash.
Right.
So we have seen costumes for Hawkman and Hawkgirl.
Yes.
Which I think look great.
Oh, yeah. No, I think they look fantastic.
I will join the unison.
Now, they don't have wings.
Right. But they look like a version of several different variants of the costume. It's kind of more uniform. It's kind of like golden brownish, I guess.
Yeah.
I can also just see the wings sort of unfurling like it's a...
Me too. I'm sure they're CGI.
One of our customers guessed that the wings themselves will be made of nth metal, the thing from the comics that's usually his belt. But it makes actually better and faster sense to just say it's the wings themselves made out of it.
Yeah.
It's basically sort of a high-tech metal, alien metal.
Sure.
I was just glad to see they have maces. They look badass.
Yep. Yeah, they look sort of tough and feral like the Hawks usually do. The costumes looked cool. They remind me a little bit of like some of the looks that he had for Hawk World, you know, like more a little more Thanagarian cop.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But we still don't know whether they're going to do that or like the Egyptian thing.
No idea.
We'll find out. It'll almost certainly be less complicated than the standard comic origin.
Yes, that's true. We also have a trailer for Flash, Otherworlds is what it's called.
Mm-hmm. Which little glimpses.
Yeah, shows us that Earth 2, Jay Garrick, hints at Zoom. Has Atom Smasher from the JSA.
Right.
Cisco being Cisco.
Yep. What I was thinking while I was watching that is that Cisco can deliver lines that I would probably find corny or kind of annoying from other people. But I think because he says it a little bit with that, the ironic detachment his character is supposed to have, a little bit of that, you know, smart ass.
You see him as ironic because he's actually, I mean, he's sincere.
He's sincere, but I guess it's not ironic, but he's so
knowing.
Versed in it
that
it sounds like the kind of things he would say.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a combination of his sincerity and then just sort of being, you know, internet and pop cultural savvy.
Yeah.
He gets away with stuff that I might not like from other characters.
What's the girl's name? Patty? Is
that Spivitt. Her?
Patty Spivitt? Okay.
Yeah, I don't know.
Now, see, in the comics, she was Barry Allen's new love interest.
Correct.
Given how she interacts with Cisco, I think she's Cisco's love interest.
That would make sense.
Yeah.
Because Barry has one. He has two.
Right. And they've already kind of, you know, teased enough complications with them that it would make more sense to.
This makes me happy because I didn't need another triangle with him and Iris. I'm guessing just based on the trailer, I think that's where they're going to go with that, which is kind of cool.
I really don't need another love story.
Yeah,
and because Cisco got shut down hard by Killer Frost.
Yeah, Killer Frost.
In that trailer, what's
her name?
Golden Glider.
Golden Glider, yes.
Don't we see them interacting again?
Yeah.
Golden Glider and...
No. I thought that was Patty and him.
Oh, was it? Okay.
I could be wrong.
Yeah, I don't know. There was a lot of stuff flashing at me very quickly, so I didn't contextualize.
A lot of stuff flashing at you very quickly in the Flash trailer.
Yes, it was.
it's a good trailer. It doesn't give away too much. I'm excited to
you'll just get
have
a
it come back.
Burst of information on the next season.
We're still about a month out. It's not till beginning of October, so... Actually, just a few weeks, I guess. But I'm ready. I'm ready for more Flash.
You get Flash and iZombie in the same night.
That's right. Yep.
Yes.
Also, given a teaser, although really it's not much of a teaser, Jessica Jones on Netflix.
Right.
But the teaser isn't the important part. The important part is we have a date.
Jessica
Jones.
November 11th?
November 20th.
20th.
Yep, okay. November 20th is the premiere of all the episodes of Jessica Jones, which... Seems like
called Jessica Jones or AKA.
It's called Jessica Jones.
Okay,
just seems
they changed it.
It was a good idea.
Yeah, I think so too.
It's a little AKA is not super pull off the tongue.
Yeah,
and I actually thought the trailer was interesting in the sense that it felt very David Mackish.
Yeah,
that sort of kind of style.
Yeah,
and I thought that was kind of a nice little nod.
You know, I thought you didn't notice the purple tint that came over everything, right? I mean, that was sort
of
the...
I noticed that, but I guess it didn't. I thought that was just sort of a. In a weird way, when I was watching that, I was like, oh, you know, purple sort of seems like a sort of stereotypically feminine color. And I know where you're heading with this. And I was just thinking, I'm like, it almost seems slightly retrograde to have that associated with their first female character on Netflix. But of course,
it's Purple Man.
The Purple Man.
Yeah, that is going to cast a pall over the whole season. So, So that's that looks. I'm excited to see that come up. Moving on to movies, they're re-ranking Roadhouse, and I believe everyone would say, "Why aren't you making Roadhouse? It's a bad idea." But then, did you hear the cast in Roadhouse?
Right.
It's Ronda Rousey. It's Ronda Rousey from MMA.
Yeah,
who everybody's in love with, and I'm like, okay, I get it now.
Now the question is, does she have that sort of goofily likable personality that Patrick Swayze pulled off in that movie?
I think she does. That seems to be sort of her thing.
Yeah,
you know,
I don't watch the MMA. Well, I've seen her in her social media onslaught, just kind of as a popular figure.
She's somewhat geeky, and she does, you know, she's a great fighter, and so I think...
I did watch a video where she's talking about her deep love of Pokemon.
Yeah.
And was it some comic thing, too, I feel like? But yeah, she's definitely... Yeah. She's got some geek blood in her, for sure.
Yeah. So I thought that's kind of a cool thing. I'm curious to see where they go. Of course, I've never seen the original Roadhouse.
Really?
Which I should do at some point.
For sure. That seems like a movie watching thing.
Yeah, I'm not going to watch that by myself. Yeah. We also saw the trailer for Krampus, which is from the guy who did Trick or Treat, I believe.
Oh, is that right? I didn't notice anybody. Yeah. I didn't look into who.
I believe it is the same director that did Trick or Treat.
I was kind of surprised by this trailer, mainly because I thought it was going to just be, you know, your typical...
Were you expecting Goofy?
Horror thing. Yeah. And it actually looks like they put in a lot of depth to the characters.
Yeah.
And
well, Trick or Treat is a great movie. It's a great sort of modern day Halloween classic.
Bates.
Yeah. I remember who all is in this. Is Toni Collette in this? I
feel like yes, she Toni is. Collette, yeah. Kathy Bates. The Millie? He's been in Party Down.
It's Adam Scott.
Yeah, it's Adam Scott.
Yeah.
And it just looks very satirical, very funny, but. Kind of creepy as well.
Yeah, it's not. I was expecting goofier than that, and it's not goofy.
No, well, there's definitely going to be humor in it.
Yeah,
I can
sure.
That.
Yeah,
but maybe sort of a little more like actually probably less humor than Scream, or maybe along those
maybe
lines.
Maybe Gremlins esque.
Yeah, I can see that.
That felt sort of what it is.
Am I correct? Like, I don't know. I saw the kid in it like has his note to Santa or his letter to Santa, and he like tears it up. Is that supposed to be what summons him?
I think it might be. Yeah,
because it looked like he threw it out into the wind and magical
like
wind
cloud.
So people know what a Krampus is, right? People know Krampus.
Oh, it is just Krampus.
Yeah,
Krampus as if it's his name.
Yes, Krampus is his name. He's a thing.
He's like an evil ass Santa.
We probably summoned him.
Yep. No, he's not Candyman.
You don't know.
Yeah, he's Santa's. Isn't he going? He goes after naughty children. Is that basically the thing?
I think so. Yeah, it was a separate
Scandinavian. Or?
Yeah, I think it's like a separate. Man, I can't remember where that originates from. Scandinavia, or Germany.
It might be Germany. Now that I'm thinking about.
But I think traditionally a horned sort of goat-like man who has like switches to beat children with.
Yep.
And it's like
the naughty children.
He's been showing up in a lot of pop culture lately.
Yeah, there was a comic series
probably for the last 10 years, really. Yeah. As of this movie, it will have surely hit critical mass.
And he will almost certainly show up in Grant Morrison's Klaus Year One thing.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yep. He could easily be the villain.
All right, our good friend Jason Murphy, a longtime friend, customer, has his first horror short story published in a collection called Fresh Meat.
Yep, yeah, I saw
which,
that.
Which, if you go to Amazon, you can check that out, and we'll provide a link to that. And then finally, Nick, there's a new action figure display.
Yes, there is. It's two different displays. One is very, 90% done.
Yep.
And then the other one is not... really
10%
started,
done?
It's like 10%.
But the front one, sort of the core one, is that 90% done.
Yes, and we're doing a rock concert, specifically a all-female rock band consisting of the exes of Hawkeye.
Yep.
So let's quick go through them again. It is Spider-Woman.
Who's the lead singer.
Who else do we have?
Mockingbird.
Mockingbird on drums.
Scarlet Witch.
Scarlet Witch on bass. And Black Widow.
Right.
On guitar. All custom built instruments as usual.
Yes. I even put strings on them.
Right. You've got Smoke on the Stage.
Yes.
With Cotton and stuff. I think my favorite part still remains the J. Jonah Jameson crowd surfing. forced crowd surfing, because I can only assume he'd be like, Parker, how did you drag me to this?
I also like Batroc having leapt up to... is it Batroc? Yeah, Batroc's leapt up
so he
can get
a... Well, he couldn't see behind Giant Rhino, so he had to jump.
Yeah, the leap.
There are characters out in the audience dancing.
Yeah.
Everybody's got their hands up like they just don't care.
Yeah. Agent Coulson is there. Greedo is there dancing John Travolta style. Yep.
There's a lineup of Spider-Man in the rafters.
Yeah, that was kind of my favorite because it looks like Jameson is looking up at the Spider-Man 2099, Ben Reilly, and Peter, and just like cursing.
Ultimate humiliation. Yeah. Spider-Man's got to watch him.
Yep. And there's a Deadpool.
Deadpool descending. I have to put a sign in his hand because there's a reason he's descending down. But.
Yep.
And then the other side, which I'm going to do, is all concessions and merchandise.
And this is going in the actual other side of the counter in the sort of big display box sort of thing,
yeah.
Where you once had the Star Wars display that was for Star Wars Day a couple of years back.
And Nick, you have custom built a large amount of X-Men.
Yeah, well, it's kind of crazy, and I don't know if it's Hasbro saying, or a Marvel edict that they're not doing X-Men toys. Right. Although they just did a Magic figure for, their...
one of their sets at Comic-Con.
Yeah, San Diego Comic-Con sets. But yeah, no, I've noticed that there have just been very few, and I've been wanting many of those characters in my display.
Has there been a commensurate rise in Inhumans figures?
Not really, unfortunately.
You know why? Because nobody cares
they
about
They did
Inhumans.
A San Diego set that had Black Bolt and Medusa, but...
Yeah.
Where's my Lockjaw?
It is weird that they haven't done Lockjaw.
Yeah, I think Lockjaw is a
pain
to make.
Well, they're about to do it as a 3¾ that's going to come with a Miss Marvel figure.
Ah.
But not in the 6-inch line, cool. Which is a little sad. Your
X-Men figures look really great, though.
Yeah.
Thank you.
They're... What's the era?
It's kind of all over the place, but mainly from the X-Men cartoon from the 90s and the X-Men Outback. Which I can't remember the writers on that.
It was Claremont.
Was it Claremont? Yep. Sylvester was drawing, I think.
Yep.
Yes, Sylvester was drawing.
But you've got Cyclops, Storm, Mohawk Storm, of course.
Mohawk Storm.
Dazzler, circa that era.
Dazzler with that era costume, but I had to add in some roller skates.
Custom 70s style
skates. Roller skates.
Sure.
She has to have them.
Yep.
Gambit, Rogue, and Wolverine, of course.
Yep.
In his brown costume.
Yep.
Because that is the best costume.
They should call him the Brown Wolverine.
And the only X-Men figure that is actually normal is Archangel.
Right.
And I love that figure because his wings are insanely huge.
So, come out and see the display if you haven't yet.
Pictures are acceptable.
Yep,
of course.
And we'll be back in just a minute to talk about comics for the week. We are talking comics for Wednesday, September 16th, and we're going to start off with a group pick.
Yeah,
this doesn't happen very often.
It's a group cheater pick.
Yeah, we've all been picking this book for so long. We all loved it this week, and we're like, you're probably tired of hearing us talk about this. We didn't want to have somebody pick it, so we're going to just start with it.
Sure.
And that book is Star Wars number 9, which is part 2 of the new arc.
Which was an exceptionally fun, it's random issue.
Really good. It's got Han Solo's quote unquote wife, along with Princess Leia.
Yeah, sees that story continue.
And it's got Luke Skywalker and R2 on Nar Shadda, the Hutt's moon.
Yep. What I liked? There's a chase sequence on Nar Shadda.
Yeah.
And there's this guy who's stolen Luke's lightsaber. And if this were a movie, essentially what this is kind of a what do you call the thing where people leap and vault across buildings? What do they call
parkour?
It? Oh, parkour. It's like a parkour type chase across the rooftops of Nar Shadda.
Yep.
And the guy who stole his lightsaber leaps onto like some kind of a nearby ship and he's hanging from it.
Yep.
And this is Luke, who's not yet a Jedi but has exhibited Force powers because this is just right after the first Star Wars movie. And I liked it when he's like. Looks like he's like 20 or 30 feet away from the building's ledge.
Right.
It's like Luke is running to jump, and he's like, "Don't be a fool, you can't make it." And Luke, of course, makes it.
Yep.
It's a cool opening sequence.
Well, yeah. Also, just we get a real sense of the sort of what Nar Shadda really is, because it's broken up into different places owned or run by different people, and it's kind of cool to see that.
And he can we say who the foe is, who he runs into, who the lightsaber was stolen for?
We should leave that alone. But but there's a lot of cool stuff. There's a new character introduced, sort of a villain, and then there's a great last page stinger that I won't give away.
Yep.
And there's starfighter chases and a roof chase and some
Luke
fights.
Luke has a cool fight with some retro threats from from Clone the Clone Wars era. That if you've watched like the Clone Wars animated series, you'll definitely be familiar with this these threats.
But yeah, it's just lots of fun, lots of stuff going on. They pack so much story into these issues, and Stuart Immonen's art is amazing.
It really is.
Yeah,
great, just great character bits all throughout. And Immonen, like you said, I mean, his references to the actual like Star Wars vehicles and weapons and looks. I mean, the TIE fighter pilots that we see
look super cool.
Who actually get to do some groundwork, which I think is awesome. Their guns; those are the guns that you know they would use. I have action figures with those specific weapons.
He's done his reference work.
Yep, and I continue to just really like what Jason Aaron is doing in this book. I really like this book.
Yeah,
and if you'll remember, I was super skeptical.
Yep.
And I was wrong.
hear that again. Randy was wrong.
And if somebody could go ahead and loop that,
loop it and add it to everything. Okay.
All right. So that's our group cheater pick. Dave, what is your actual pick this week?
My actual pick this week is a long-delayed comic that I ended up liking.
2008.
2008 at least is what the date is for some of the preview art and stuff in this. This is Captain America White. The latest, or maybe the final, in the color series that Jeff Loeb writes and Tim Sale draws. Previous versions have been Spider-Man Blue, Daredevil Yellow, Hulk Gray.
Yeah.
Is that everything?
That's everything
so far. And I was never sure what the delay was in this, but does anybody know?
No idea.
Format-wise, though,
scheduling?
Much like the... it's much like the previous ones, which is all of those, weirdly, were characters kind of reflecting on lost ones, loved ones of some sort. You know, with Peter, it was...
He was recording a letter to Gwen Stacy on, like, a microphone.
Yeah, yeah. It had a deliberately retro feel.
And Daredevil was Karen Page, right. And Hulk was... I don't even know what Hulk was,
Betty was dead
at the time.
And here, rather than being a significant other, it's his best friend, Bucky. And for all you did mention, Randy, the possibility that Cap, that maybe this changed because they did create the Winter Soldier,
right.
You know, some years ago, and this could have been thrown things off where he's like, oh, wait, you know, maybe I'm not going to write this if Bucky is back.
Or, right.
Although I feel like that would still make for an interesting ending to see what happens when... You know, when you're reunited with somebody you thought was dead.
Yeah.
But anyway, this begins here with for a few pages you see Cap when he's found in the ice by the original Avengers, and then you do jump ahead to sort of, I guess the then present of him reflecting on, you know, what he thinks was the death of Bucky. But of course, the bulk of the book shifts back to their World War II heyday when they were partners, and they kind of they run into Nick Fury and his Howling Commandos. Randy, I know you were not big on the slightly antagonistic relationship with him.
Not my thing,
but I liked it.
It wasn't mine either.
I thought it lent some. You know, if it's all just a bunch of guys on the field who are like, "Yay, let's get them." And to me, I think that would have been boring, and I thought this gave it a little pizzazz, since I suspect they will all end up having sort of a mutual respect anyway. But it follows them on the battlefield. It's kind of in some ways, it's got a little bit of edge, but it's also World War II, and it's sort of more adventuresome Indiana Jones style, where, you know, I don't know, they're... You know, Bucky kicks a Nazi and he's like, boot meat sauerkraut. And, you know, where you can kind of joke around a little bit more like Silver Age comics.
I was going to say, it feels very Silver Age.
Even Bronze Age comics carried that over to some degree. and then there's some downtime stuff with Steve Rogers and Bucky, you know, just kind of dealing with their friendship and, you know, ups and downs. Ultimately, this seems like it's culminating in a mission that's going to put Captain America and the Howling Commandos, you know, they're going to continue working together. And this is a double-sized issue. So that's like the first half of the issue.
Yep.
The second half is a reprint of the, was it Zero issue?
Which I think came out like 6 years ago, six or 7 years ago.
Yeah. And this is, it's sort of how, that's sort of a telling of how Bucky uncovered Cap's identity and essentially got recruited as his sidekick in the first place.
Right.
They don't go into it with any heavy realism as far as, like, why would a kid who's, like, maybe, what, 16 tops be, you know, recruited to lead the American war effort in a costume?
Right.
But there was a little bit of token realism where, like, Cap brings it up to the brass after he decides to do it, and they think it's going to, like, help with the recruiting effort to have, like, a young partner for Cap, and so I'm like, oh, that makes some sense. Anyway, the book surprised me. I liked, of course, I always liked Tim Sale's art on it. I don't know that there's anything notable to say about this other than if you like Tim Sale, you're probably going to like this. The color palette seemed a little darker, and I'm sure that was to give it a little bit of that World War II Saving Private Ryan kind of a little bit of grit to it.
Right.
But definitely something for the Captain America fans to check out or anybody who's followed any of the other mega hit projects from Loeb and Sale.
Cool.
That is my pick.
My pick is also a Marvel pick and also S.H.I.E.L.D. related in that it is about Agent Carter. They've been doing these S.H.I.E.L.D. one-shots. And this is another good one. It's Agent Carter number one. It's written by Catherine Immonen. Art is by Rich Ellis, who you've seen a variety of places. I don't remember off the top of my head, but he does a good sort of cartoony style. And this is a story that takes place in 1966, I believe. Yeah, on the S.H.I.E.L.D. helicarrier. It is Peggy Carter and Dum Dum Dugan. And Peggy basically gets an assignment to work with Sif, sort of to possibly train her for S.H.I.E.L.D., basically. And so the two of them go through. Hijinks ensue. There is a twist at the end. But it's basically about Peggy Carter, you know, sort of doubting herself and sort of, you know, trying to live up to being sort of hero-worshipping Sif a little bit at the same time as sort of trying to go along with a strange Asgardian goddess. And it's really good. I was not expecting it to be as good as it was. It's a lot of fun. If you like what they've been doing with Peggy Carter, this is a really good one-shot of her sort of before she became a badass S.H.I.E.L.D. agent. And really nice art, and just I really liked this. I would like to see more of this Agent Carter.
You know, what's kind of cool about immortal type characters, or mostly immortal characters like Sif or Thor or anything, is that you can drop them in any period piece you want.
Yeah,
you could, so that easily allows Sif to be around in the '60s. You could do an Old West story and have Thor in it. I've read an Old West story with Thor in it back in the day. It's a neat device. I kind of dig it.
Yeah. So definitely worth a look. Nick, what is your pick this week?
My pick is actually a hardcover.
Ooh. Yes. Fancy.
Yep. Mine is Batman Volume 7, Endgame, which is sort of the no-holds-barred match against Batman and Joker. Sort of a finale of sorts
characters. This is the seventh volume of Snyder's Snyder epic Batman run.
Greg Capullo's run. Which sees everything from the Justice League show up to, you know, every member of the Bat family being involved in sort of this cataclysmic event in Gotham as Joker releases Joker gas that covers everybody. But also it's just sort of this interesting retrospective on who Batman is and who Joker is and sort of them having to come to grips with what they are, and
Snyder's really good at getting inside those characters' heads like that.
Yeah, and there's also some great horror elements. The Joker really does do some creepy ass things in this, with hiding under Commissioner Gordon's bed. I know that sounds bizarre.
Wasn't he like under there for a length of time or something? Like something crazy? Like I've been sleeping under your bed for the last month or week or whatever.
He probably had his iPhone down there. I was playing games or watching movies. There's also
weird characters like Crazy Quilt shows up.
Crazy Quilt, wow.
I remember that. Didn't he somehow anticipate what was happening?
Yes.
Or he was like almost like a... In a novel, he'd be the guy who sort of like prophesies something is coming.
Okay.
And there's also the Court of Owls show back up. So it's sort of a culmination of what Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo have been doing for six other volumes.
Okay.
And just a very, very interesting story. Beautiful colors. I really like Greg Capullo's art. It's very flashy at times. It just works. They work really well together. And...
Now, people probably wouldn't want to come in on this volume. I mean, you could.
I honestly think if you can, I think you're better served if you've read all of it. But if you really just want to see Batman and Joker go at it,
yep.
I mean, this is one of those volumes.
Right, if they wanted that, they could read, like, The Death of the Family and then and like this one and get some great Batman-Joker material.
Yep, I honestly think you could do that. And then you might be enticed by, like, oh, well, what, who are these Court of Owls people and go back.
I do remember, like, say, with Green Lantern, a lot of people came in on that Blackest Night.
Which
was, in many ways, the culmination of Geoff Johns' like, 10-year run.
Yeah.
And, you know, would then go and backtrack on the various Green Lantern
stuff. Came in Blackest Night or Sinestro Corps War, and people were very enticed to see what all had come before. So I think this is sort of that same thing. I really, really dug it, though.
Cool. All right. Also on my stack this week, there is a book from Action Lab, which is a smaller publisher, called Awake, that seems to be sort of, there's magic, there's a little girl, there's talking dogs, looking, and it's got really nice art. So if you're looking for an all-ages book, that's one to check out. A one-shot Usagi Yojimbo story featuring a one-armed swordsman. That's a great one-off. If you've never read Usagi and you've been curious, this is a great one to check out. If you've never read Usagi and you're not curious, you should be, because it's one of those great books.
Yeah.
And I'm glad to have it back on a monthly basis.
Stan Sakai is better than most at, you know, this is a series that's probably, if you were to add up all the issues, including the pre-Dark Horse ones, would be like 200 issues or
something,
right?
At least, yeah.
And yet, an issue like this can come along and easily, I mean, be jumped into by anybody.
Yeah.
The start of any of his storylines are always very approachable.
Yeah. Penultimate issue, number 4 of Spider Island, which has been one of my favorite Secret Wars books. That one has some good twists and turns this week. The penultimate issue of Infinity Gauntlet, which we've talked about at length on this show before. The second issue of the new story arc of Sex Criminals, number 12, which is great. It's so good and continues to develop those characters. And Sex Criminals, honestly, is almost worth reading just for the letter column, because it's funny and it's sort of like the comic book equivalent of the Dan Savage show. There's talk about sex. There's lots of jokes. There's talks about depression and working in this industry. It's like it covers all kinds of material.
Serious and comedic.
Yeah, it's really great.
There's also this week that has a variant cover.
Yes, by Kate Leth, the Triple X cover.
Yep, which you'll have to pay like a buck more.
Yep,
for,
and it comes
like
in
that.
comes a play bag.
Yep.
Rat Queens number 12, the second issue with Tess Fowler on art. I love this issue. This was really funny, really good. I continue to love this book, and I'm glad it's back on track. Number 9 of The Fade Out, which starts the third arc of The Fade Out, which is, honestly, even Brubaker admits in the back, this is very much a one big story.
Right.
So number 9 is further developing, but it's not like I wouldn't jump on with number 9. Like, if you've been reading it, it's great, and it's more story. If you haven't, go back and read the trades, of which Volume 2 also comes out this week.
You get Volume 1 and
Act
2.
Act 2.
Yeah.
And Fade Out is his 50s noir, post-World War II, during the...
It's a Hollywood kind of
It's
noir,
a Hollywood
right?
noir. It is pretty much straightforward noir. And I'm really, really liking it. And Volume 2 of one of our favorite books, Birthright, comes out this week, which... reveals some big things about the lead hero and flashes back to his time in the fantasy world. And we've talked numerous times about Birthright, but this is a really great book. The second trade is definitely worth picking up. Nick, what else is on your stack?
Not a ton. In fact, I might have the second issue of Beauty.
Yep.
Which Image book about a STD that makes you beautiful. And
then
the possibility
and blows
of
up your head.
Blowing up your entire body.
Right.
I was kind of taken by the first issue. I was unsure of where it was going to go, but the second issue is just as good.
Yeah, I like the second issue a lot.
I am liking what Jeremy Hahn is doing, and I think the art is very, very, very nice.
Yep.
And I'm sold on this story. I want to see where it goes.
Yeah, me too. I'm very much into it.
And I think that might actually be all the...
Well, there is a new Image book, Tokyo Ghost.
Right.
That is by...
I think Dave.
Oh, is Dave going to talk about that?
I was going
to
mention it.
Sorry.
Have a fourth issue of Star Wars Lando.
Right.
And then Battleworld Secret Wars Journal, which I've always...
Right.
Just little vignette stories
yep.
that are always interesting.
Cool. Dave, I hear the Tokyo Ghost is on your stack.
Yeah, Tokyo Ghost is on my stack. Since I haven't read it, that's all I have to say about
yeah.
it. Now, it's by Rick Remender, who has written many best-selling book lately.
Low, Black Science, Deadly Class.
Yep. And has, you know, definitely had his time at Marvel, where he went over a lot of fans with his, like,
Uncanny X-Force.
X-Force or Uncanny Avengers and stuff. This is like a sort of has a it seems like a sort of punk future kind of vibe to it.
Punk future Akira.
Yeah, Neo-Tokyo type. Yeah,
about two sort of bounty hunters going after, you know, after bounties. It's a, but there's more to it than that. There's
did
a
we
lot
mention
of
Sean Murphy, by the way.
Yeah, Sean Murphy is on art. And that's probably the biggest thing. He's the guy who just did came off Chrononauts. Has done any number of books for Vertigo.
Punk Rock Jesus.
Joe the Barbarian.
Joe the Barbarian.
The Wake.
So if you've been following Remender or just, you know, Image Number Ones, which so many people are following these days because they have such a good track record, you'll want to check that one out.
Right.
I also have the fourth issue of Constantine the Hellblazer, that latest iteration of the Hellblazer / John Constantine comics.
Right.
I quite like the orange cover.
The you know, the art on it has, throughout the relaunch has been really good. It's sort of a new, slightly more pop look for Constantine, but I've liked it. And I don't think I brought it back here for the podcast, but I wanted to mention the A-Force trade paperback this week, which is a compilation of all the first issues of sort of Marvel's big new female leads.
It's what, Captain Marvel, Miss Marvel, and She-Hulk?
Black Widow.
Black Widow, Beatable Squirrel Girl.
Is there that many in there?
Yeah, there's six number ones in
there. Oh, wow.
Yeah, and maybe all the ones that they are simultaneously, they're doing those dollar True Believer issues.
Right.
But, you know, if you happen to want to get your sample in a kind of graphic novel format or give it as a gift or something like that.
And it's a good price, too. I don't remember off the top of my head, but it's a good...
$14.99.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, that's everything in my stack.
All right. That will wrap up comics for this week. We'll be back in just a few minutes to talk about some TV, movies, and other stuff. So this weekend, or at least this Friday, I went down to Alamo City Comic Con down in San Antonio.
I don't believe you.
I did. There were pictures.
Oh, actually, he brought back gifts for us. So
I did. I brought back presents to everybody.
That's true. Although you could have sent somebody to pick it up. But okay, let's just say you did go and proceed from that as if...
How was this con?
So it was.
That you may or may not have attended.
So it was really fun. This is the third year for Alamo City Comic Con, and they have grown pretty impressively. It was a big show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, since it was like an hour and a half south of us, not bad to get to. Yeah. I went down and back the same day. And there were a couple of people there that we like, friends of the store, like Scott Collins used to live here, who mm-hmm. you know he's the previous Flash artist, and John Layman and Rob Guillory did Chew. And Bob Layton, who did the Iron Man that I loved when I was a kid.
Legendary
so
Iron Man.
There was that. And they, of course, had the usual Hollywood guests and a variety of stuff. But so I went down there just to sort of check it out and have dinner with Scott. And I was really impressed with what I saw. It's a really good con. They've got a kid's corner. It's like very, very kid friendly.
Oh,
lots of cosplay. I saw some really awesome costumes.
What's the best one you saw?
Man.
Or a favorite.
It's that Spider-Woman that I saw, there was someone who did the new Spider-Woman. That was a great costume.
The newest version of the costume?
Yes, yep.
Yeah.
There were also a couple people dressed up as Talons. I saw a couple Green Arrows. There was a lot of different cosplay.
Nice.
And then also there were some good booths with, like, you know, T-shirts and stickers and all that kind of stuff that you find at conventions. Like, if you took kids in here, they would have a great time and they wouldn't see anything that they shouldn't see. Like, some conventions are really bad about adult material or whatever. This was a really family-friendly con.
That's great to hear.
And just, like, I was impressed with the guest list. They had everybody from sort of My Little Pony artist and writer Katie Cook to, like, you know, industry legends like Bob Layton. Stan Lee was there for on Saturday, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And just really well organized, really nicely put together. I picked up a bunch of prints and that kind of thing when I got down there, and just thought this was, it's a really strong convention. People always talk about we don't really have a lot of strong local conventions. You know, we get Wizard World Austin, which is sort of a smaller show,
but it's pretty polished.
It is, but you don't like you know we don't have a San Diego or a New York and like
sure,
that. And this is not that. But it's a pretty good show, and they seem to be drawing in some people. So put that on your radar for next year, because Alamo City is definitely one that I will try and get to again next year.
Very cool.
If you actually went this year.
And I did.
Randy, you weren't prepared at all for us to doubt that you actually went.
I'm very skeptical.
Randy's looking at us like, what the fuck?
And Nick, Did you see a movie this weekend?
I did.
Did you really?
I really did.
See, it doesn't feel so good, does it, Nick? Prove it. Where's your ticket stub?
I'm sure it's in a pocket somewhere.
I believe you.
Thank you.
What, you son of a...
Anyways, I, my wife and I did get out and go see a movie. We wanted to get our scare on, so we decided to go see the new M. Night Shyamalan, or however you...
Shyamalan.
Shyamalan.
The Visit.
Right.
Which I will hesitantly, and I'm sure you guys will look at me skeptically, saying it's sort of a return to form to what he used to make. Because he went off the deep end for me with Lady in the Water, which I did not care for.
And then had like 6 or 7 years of
really terrible movies.
And then he did...
The Happening?
The Happening, which I did not see, mainly because I heard just the awfulness of
that
movie.
I saw it for you, it was bad.
Yeah. But this one is kind of a quieter film. There is a twist, of course, because he does just do twists.
You know what I read somewhere, though? I read that it's more of a plot development than a twist.
Yeah, and that's sort of what it is.
For instance, like, because I think people hear twist and they're just like, oh my god. But, like, you know, we both saw the movie he wrote but didn't direct,
Devil,
which was really good, and it had a reveal at the end, but I wouldn't call it a twist by any means.
Yeah, I mean...
You know, any more than... Psycho is a movie with a twist. Actually, I guess
Psycho is a movie with a twist.
This is kind of a twist. I mean, there's no getting around it. There is sort of a twist to it.
Okay.
But it's a good twist. The whole notion behind this entire film is that a mother sort of is at odds with her mother and father, leaves as a teenager, and this is some years down the road where her kids sort of want to get to know the grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
And
kids never want to get to know their grandparents.
Hey, you know, I have great memories of my grandpa.
Oh.
So basically they go visit with them for a week.
Yep.
And odd things are occurring.
Right. If I know things from the trailer, I saw naked grandma clawing the walls
and
like other scary things, people being chased around in like the basement or some kind of floorboards or something.
The kind of interesting thing is that Shyamalan brings some reality to that too, because it's explained away some of the things you're mentioning as sort of Alzheimer's, sundowners, things like that,
right.
Which actually there is some basis in fact of what they're talking about. I've experienced it, I've seen it, it's not fun.
Now, I actually saw this brought up in a review. Would you feel like it's like exploitive of all at all of like sort of mental illness or something like that?
No,
like,
I don't.
It's obviously lensed for a horror movie, so you know, it's almost unavoidable, but
I don't feel it's exploitive at all, honestly.
Okay, that's good.
Well, you know, Psycho's not a particularly positive portrayal of mental illness either.
No.
But or of trans people.
Yeah, but it's a horror movie, that's not what it's about. Yeah.
I thought the acting was particularly well done, especially by the kids. I'm always surprised when kids sort of are the focal points and they pull it off somehow.
Mm-hmm.
Especially the younger boy. I'm not going to spoil his sort of gimmick because he has one. It is amazing.
Is he a hacker super gymnast like in Jurassic Park?
He does not beat raptors with gymnastics.
Does he speak in rhyme?
does he speak backwards?
He does not speak backwards. But
you know, I was watching a little bit of Stand By Me a few weeks ago on Netflix streaming, and there's one of those movies where those kids are probably like around somewhere between 11 and 13 or so, and they were amazing. In it.
Yeah,
those kids are all great.
They were great. And I actually thought the grandparents very creepy, very effective.
Did it have that sort of Shyamalan cadence to it? It's like slightly unusual dialogue.
Yes. Slightly unusual dialogue, also darkly hilarious dialogue.
Okay. He's got some funny moments.
Is he in it?
He is actually not in it.
Oh, wow.
He takes a turn for it and does not show up. Or if he did, I
missed
it.
He played the grandmother in a grandmother
suit. No.
Had a CG over him. He did mocap.
Mocap, yeah.
I don't think anything he will ever make will beat Sixth Sense.
No. His first movie was his best movie.
It is his best. This is not as good as Signs. Well, no, actually, it's not as good as The Village or Signs, but it's in that ballpark.
Yeah. Okay, all right.
I do highly recommend people checking it out. I also recommend people just be entertained by it. Don't try to figure out the twist. My wife, she figured it out. She didn't tell me or anything during the movie. I didn't. I was just kind of enjoying the ride,
mm-hmm.
and I was able to do that and very, very pleased with the experience that I had.
Well, I'll have to check it out, as I do like the scary.
All right, so one last thing. I have been engaging in what I consider the ultimate comfort food TV of late, and that is Friends on Netflix. I watched this show so much when I was in my 20s. Because I was in my 20s in the 90s, just like,
that you feel like, Ross is your unofficial big brother.
No. That I remember all of it.
Nobody liked Ross.
Nobody likes Ross.
Really?
Everybody wants to be Chandler.
Yeah, that's true.
No, it's funny because I remember all of this and I watched it enough times where like, I know all the dialogue, I know all the beats of it, but it's still like comfort food TV.
Do you remember all like 8 seasons of
it? No. I am watching I'm in season 1 and 2, and I'm going to get to the point where I don't remember.
I get to
season
4, and I'm like, I don't remember after that.
Yeah, well, I mean, I remember later on that like Paul Rudd shows up and becomes sort of the major character, and Aish Tyler shows up. But as far as like what happens in the story, no, I believe that basically about the time Monica and Chandler get together, spoilers, that's when I start losing remember of exactly what's happening.
I was deeply amused when Bruce Willis was dating Jennifer Aniston's character.
I don't know if I saw that one.
Oh, it was a sort of ongoing thing. It was actually very funny.
I did drop off the show toward the end and came back for the last season. So
I remember at one point I was working nights and I had to stop watching it because I didn't. And I remember coming back for the finale.
Yeah.
I watched the finale. But.
Well, this is I was like, it's on there. It's good. I can put it on the background. And I believe that I will probably go ahead and watch all the way through and see some of the episodes I've never seen before and watch all the way to the end. It is funny that some of the characters that I liked at the time, like I find Rachel just endlessly annoying.
I think she got better in later seasons. Yeah. What's annoying about her?
There's really no
quirkiness.
No, she's just annoying. She's not spoiled really, and narcissistic.
She's not really quirky. That's Phoebe's sort of thing.
Yeah.
Right.
No, she's so spoiled. She's so self-involved.
Yeah.
And it
you think
just.
That was the intent. I mean, obviously, not that you dislike her for it, but
that was the intent. That's the character, yeah.
But they were like, people will be charmed by this and not like.
I mean, they all had their sort of,
foibles?
Yes.
Yeah, Ross is annoying.
Ross is utterly annoying.
But he was the romantic lead, basically.
Which I don't get, but whatever. Yeah.
You know.
Well, I mean, I think that was kind of part of the thing. He was the unusual romantic lead.
Yeah. Joey was the
dumb guy.
The dumb guy, also got all the girls.
Yeah, yeah. And Chandler was the sarcastic guy.
That everybody wanted to be.
Yeah. It's kind of fun. But you know the movie Reality Bites?
Yeah, the Ben Stiller?
Yeah. I loved that movie, and then I went to watch it a few years ago, and I was like, oh, I hate all you kids. And so don't watch movies you love when you're in your 20s, when you're in your 40s, because all we'll do is make you remember all the things you didn't like about yourself when you're in your 20s.
Unless you have great taste in your 20s, and it's just a return to greatness.
Do either of you have other like TV shows or anything that you constantly return to, sort of comfort food television?
News Radio, Seinfeld, I'm sure there are some others.
Nope.
And Dave is actually watching one right now that
it's not so much
like,
comfort food as a. This is really just a second viewing for me of West Wing.
Actually, West Wing became comfort food for me. I've watched like the first 3 seasons multiple times.
Yeah.
Well, our friend Ben Kimball, I noticed, was watching it just the other day, was watching West Wing just clearly kind of as comfort food while he was like doing stuff around his house.
Yeah.
And also our customer and friend Jarek never watched it. I guess decided to check it out and was having a great time. And it was actually his enthusiasm for it that reminded me of like, oh, so many good scenes. The other week I ended up watching a bunch of clips on YouTube and I was like, oh yeah, the show was amazing.
Yep.
And so now I'm back kind of rewatching it again.
Well, we were in a different era where Netflix people were discovering new shows. I mean, there are young people now watching Friends. Young people. God, I sound old. Watching Friends.
Young people watching Wonder Years.
Yeah. I mean, but that, like, they're like, they'll talk. One of the various TV podcasts I listen to, people talking about, people talking about what shows they're watching. Like, have you seen the show Friends? And it's basically like as if it was a new show.
Yeah.
Because,
oh, that's interesting.
Because all the catalog is available streaming now.
Right, so it is as if Netflix has uploaded, like when they upload an original show and like all the episodes are out, they're like, oh, all this new show Friends is up, let's check it out.
Exactly.
Look at this new show called MASH.
Yeah. Yeah. So, which I think is really interesting. And the nice thing is it preserves TV history a little bit better, is that everything's available to watch. Mm-hmm. So, I mean,
it's weird to consider that people might actually become, well, if not more versed in history, than at least in entertainment history.
Yeah, yeah. More pop culture will not become as ephemeral as it has been.
Right, it's something.
Just wish the News Radio was actually on Netflix.
Or somewhere streaming. I mean, finally, Hulu finally got Seinfeld.
Yeah, that's true.
Friends is relatively new to Netflix, so yeah, News Radio does need to go up. News Radio is an underrated classic.
West Wing is on Netflix, right?
Yep. Oh, hey, so Jarek, when he was watching it, said, I think I asked him how far he was going to watch it. He's like, well, I've got 8 seasons. And I was like, well, I think you're going to probably want to stop before you get through all 8.
You know, here's the thing is, though, from what I hear, after Sorkin left, it was rough for a couple seasons, and then it got good again.
I've heard the same thing. I don't think I've ever watched past season 4.
I watched the end of season 3, which is the end of Sorkin's run, I believe.
Was it? I thought he went through 4.
Maybe it was 4. I've watched the end of his run.
Am I correct? Is season 3 that ended with the whether he was going to run for re-election?
No, that's season 2.
Is 3 the kidnapping?
Yeah, I thought season 3 ended with the kidnapping.
May.
Because that's 4, when Sorkin left.
And 4 came back was the president giving up presidency.
That was during the season 3.
That season 3?
Yeah, that was during season 3. Basically, Sorkin, the rumor has it that Sorkin basically left everybody a mess.
Yeah.
That he was mad about being kicked off, and so he had Zoe kidnapped, and the president stepped down, and the Republican leader, John Goodman, come in and basically be the president, and basically left them a mess deliberately to screw with them.
But I know in later seasons, people like Alan Alda come on.
Yeah, Alan Alda's supposed to be great.
Jimmy Smits is supposed to be really good.
You mentioned John Goodman, and he's always good.
Yeah. I don't think he was great in this, unfortunately. Really? I think he was given a bad role.
He had a little dog that he kind of had to come around, or always carried around.
Yeah.
It was a little weird.
Checkers.
Yeah. It was, I know that at the time I was like, with no Sorkin, no West Wing for me, and I was already losing interest in it.
Yeah.
But I thought it was season 3. Maybe it was season 4, but I think it was season 3.
I think I would say that up through season 3 at least is pretty gold material.
Yeah, and especially season 1 and 2 are really great.
Yes.
So, yeah. All right, so that's it for us this week. We'll be back next week with more. Until that time, Yo Joe! And that'll wrap it up for us this week. As always, you can drop us email with topic suggestions, things you want us to hear about, or just comments on the podcast at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at roguesgallery. Check us out on Facebook. Check out our website at www.roguesgallerytx.com. Check us out on Instagram at roguesgallerytx. And if you want to help us out, go over to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating and a little review. We'd very much appreciate it. And we will be back next week.